I live in Israel. This season is dedicated to the memory of the 1,400 of my countrymen who were massacred on October 7th and the 240 people that were kidnapped and are being held hostage by the terrorist organization Hamas. Hopefully they will be returned to their families as soon as possible, and hopefully this terrible war will be able to come to a peaceful end very soon. Welcome to the final episode, episode 131 of Move Around Minute, the daily podcast where we take a Capra's journey through the 1946 classic It's a Wonderful Life, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again, and for the last time this season, is my good friend Jake Cluid of the Deep Blue Sea Pod. Welcome back to the show, Jay.
Thank you for having me back once again to once again talk about pretty much nothing. Another end of a film. Nothing happens.
Are you offended that there's nothing for you to talk about? Is that what you're saying?
Never, because there's always things to talk about.
Exactly. That's the thing. You don't have to worry about that. Well, you know, so it just means that we have to more or less wing it. All right.
Sure. Yeah. That's fine.
Isn't that the way that works?
Absolutely. Exactly. Yep.
All right, so minute 131 begins with the credits beginning to roll of the cast of characters and ends with the Paramount logo. But you see, that's all a bluff, because the bottom line is this minute is 34 seconds long, and 32 of those seconds is just the scroll of the names, and then we have 2 seconds or 3 seconds with the Paramount logo at the end. And we're probably not even going to talk about anything that's on the screen in this minute, because... Did you count how many characters are listed in the credits of this movie?
No. I'll start. Okay. That's what you're for.
Exactly. So there are 35 people credited. But if you go to IMDb, how many people do you think are uncredited in this movie that are not listed here?
So there's going to be people in the dancing sequence. I'm trying to think of scenes with lots of extras. I'm going to guess like an additional maybe 40 people. Let's say 50, 55. An additional 50.
97.
Okay, I should have kept going.
There are 97. I'm still shocked at that number. 97 people are uncredited in this movie, according to IMDb. And as we've talked throughout these entire 131 episodes, a lot of them are very prolific actors when you're looking at the number of movies or TV shows that they were in, but most of them have like a one line in this movie, you know, not much more than that. So it makes me wonder if this movie was made today, if they would actually have to have all 97 uncredited people on there, probably because of like SAG rules and stuff like that. They might've needed to have them, even though some of them, I don't know who they are. You know, you can never figure out some of these people.
I think, I don't know the SAG rules, but I think if they're an extra, they don't necessarily need to be credited, I think. It's only if they have actual dialogue,
if they have
receive direction. Or if they receive direction, I think. Like if they was on the day and they're singled out and someone says that you actually need to carry this tray or walk quicker, that kind of thing. If they receive that from the director, I think that is like a special credit. They get a pay bump for that kind of thing, rather than just milling around in the background. I don't know where I'm getting that from. I could be completely wrong. That is something I think I've heard in the past. I think you have to be in SAG to have a line. I think if you're given a line, you get into SAG, that kind of thing. Because I was recently talking to my Deep Blue Sea co-host, Mark Hoffman, about this, where he has done some extra work in his day, and he was like being a good guy and helping out, and they offered to give him a line. And at the time, he didn't realize what that meant, and he turned it down. Because it just meant like he's like, no, it's okay, don't worry about it. He wrote a pay bump and residuals, and maybe he got into SAG and his whole career could have been different if he just said, oh, great, thanks, and moved on with that. That's like a turning point in his career.
That was the only time that they ever offered it to him?
Other things. But that was like the first time in a fairly big project, I think. It was like a Ferretti Brothers comedy.
Oh, wow. Well, you see, it's you can look at it from the perspective that it's a George Bailey type of life. you know, if he were to go back and change one little thing, maybe, you know, maybe you wouldn't have Deep Blue Sea the
maybe
Pirate.
Or maybe we would have started it 5 years earlier. Who knows? Anything could have changed. Maybe he could have gone on to.
Depends on when it happened. Maybe you guys would never have met.
Maybes. He could have gone on to produce Deep Blue Sea 4. He could be directing them by this point. Who knows?
That's correct. There you go. So, yeah, of course. I mean, we know that this is a rabbit hole you can go down really, really far.
Absolutely. There's an infinite number of parallel universes created every infinitesimally small second.
Right.
And each one is a little bit different. So everything that could possibly happen has happened. So why bother thinking about it at all?
Oh, because it's so much fun. That's what it comes down to. We do this because it's fun.
Sure.
You don't sound too convinced of that.
No, I don't. Absolutely. So it's more the parallel universe speculation of it all. Is why bother even with that? Because your brain will just run out your nose after a little while.
Oh, but I mean that's the fun part of this whole thing. You know, to be able to think about all those things. Why not?
Yeah.
The truth is this. One of the things that I read was that this was actually the very first movie to ever deal with the idea of a multiverse, which is really cool. You know, it's possible that this movie gave the idea to people in the comics, you know, to start with the whole idea of, you know, Earth 1 and Earth 2 and stuff like that. So, you know, I always found that really cool.
So none of your It's a Wonderful Wednesdays have come from before It's a Wonderful Life?
No.
Okay. Fair enough.
No. I mean, because you've listened to all of them already, so you know.
I mean, to peek behind the curtain, some of them aren't out yet, so I don't know.
Yes, there are none.
We're not recording this today.
It's actually very funny because, you know, one of my guests did ask that question. You know, was there any? Actually, I think it was yesterday. It was Sturchik asked that yesterday.
I remember as well.
Yeah, of course. So he asked the same question. So you see, it's great minds, as they say. You know, trying to think about was there any references from beforehand, but no. But also the idea of It's a Wonderful Wednesday is based on the fact that other movies, TV shows, you know, theater productions, radio shows, comic books, you know, all these different things took it their idea from It's a Wonderful Life. So, you know, it would be hard to have something happen beforehand unless time travel was involved. So. Who knows?
Which I believe it's not.
Probably not. No. It hasn't been proven yet. How's that?
I'm working on it.
Okay, keep working on it. When you and Zerby come out with your podcasts, you know, we'll own the
whole. Jay and Robert Talk Time Travel. Maybe we already have. And it's, we haven't.
Yeah, anything's possible.
With time travelers, it's hard to say.
That's correct. There you go. That makes sense. So I found some tidbits, you know, going. I try not to go into like the trivia of IMDb while I'm doing the show because, you know, I want to find out all these things on my own. So, but at the end of the season, I do that because this way, you know, I see if there's anything that I possibly missed that was interesting to talk about. So just a few things here. How many times do you think we hear a bell ringing in the movie?
Well, there's a bunch near the end with Nick giving out wings. So there's those. There's the actual Clarence getting his wings. I'm going to go with 20.
There are 42 ringing of bells that are heard throughout the movie, which basically means that if what Clarence is telling us is right, there are 42 angels that get their wings, including him, at the end of the movie. So whether it's true or not, I couldn't
tell. I've never enjoyed that whole bell ring gives an angel its wings. Because there's a lot of bells ringing a lot of the time, worldwide, all the time, I feel like. And like, is there that many? Like, that's a lot of angels getting their wings, like, all the time.
Yeah. No, I have a problem with the idea
It feels disproportionate.
Yeah, no, I just have a problem with the fact that like, why is there any correlation? You know, that there shouldn't be any correlation between a bell ringing and an angel getting their wing. Because, you know, is a bell ringing, you know, you can go talk about, you know, the Hunchback of Notre Dame. So if he's ringing the bell every hour, so every hour there's an angel who's lined up to get his wings just because Quasimodo is ringing the bell. You know, like,
there's a quota, there's a Quasimodo definitely. Quota being met of, like, so is it the case of, okay, which angel is the best at the moment? This guy keeps ringing his bells. Is there like a ranking, a hierarchy ranking of, like, okay, this person, wings. Or is there, this is what I would like to know, is there a sound of the wings getting taken away? Is there, like, every time a sink blocks, that an angel loses his wings?
I think you should get in touch with Father David and ask him. Maybe he'll know the answer to that one.
Sure. I have some questions. Well,
spoiler alert. The Bible does not talk about angels getting wings when they hear a bell ring. So, you know, it's I guess the interpretations. You know, it's not directly in the text.
Is it specified in It's Wonderful Life that this is a Christian thing?
No, not at all.
Is this part of a Christian myth?
No.
Okay. Right.
No. I like how you use the word myth, but okay, that's fine.
I mean, what other word is that?
A Christian version? I don't know.
Fallacy?
Okay. Whatever. Whatever. We're not going to get into politics or religion here, so I'll even refrain from responding, though I do agree with you on that fact. But for other reasons. Moving on. Exactly. So I mentioned a few times that the actor who plays Nick is a actor who turned producer named Sheldon Leonard, right? And apparently the only reason that he agreed to play the part was in order to get money to buy baseball tickets.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, Sam Jackson took Deep Blue Sea, speaking of play golf. Actors take films for all kinds of
reasons. That's right. Makes sense. The other day we talked about the fact that that George calls Zuzu ginger snaps. And, you know, I brought up a few different opinions as to maybe that's the reason. But according to IMDb, the actress who played Zuzu, who's still alive as of recording, Carolyn Grimes. So she said that it actually comes from, there was a brand of ginger snaps called Zuzu ginger snaps. And that's the reason why George calls her Zuzu, my little ginger snap. So all the other reasons that we brought the other day, apparently are wrong according to her, but that's okay.
but was she named after the ginger snap?
Was the name Zuzu?
Was the character? Was in the fiction of It's Wonderful Life, was the baby Zuzu named?
Probably not.
Did she come out with
my
tuft
assumption
of red hair?
Is that, you know, that her name is not Zuzu. That's the nickname. So is the nickname named after the ginger snaps? Maybe. But the name itself was probably like Susan, Susie, something, Suzanne, something like that. You know, that's the...
I had a friend at school whose name was Anne-Marie. Her older sister couldn't say it, but she could say Mimi. So everyone just knew her as Mimi. That's where these things go.
And it's interesting that she actually agreed to that.
I think it just kind of stuck from a very early age, and then she just introduced herself as Mimi to everyone. Like, up into... I've not spoken to her for 20 years, so although she still does.
Right. But I'm saying the fact that it was from her sister, that's the thing. That's what...
Yeah. Well, maybe they got on. Some siblings get on.
I'm told that too. Okay, makes sense. Now, when we did the first week of this, we talked about you know, the various credits in the movie, and one of the things that was a little surprising to us back then was that there was more than one cinematographer. Now, did you know that there were three cinematographers on this movie, but only two of them get credit?
I did not. Please tell me more.
Okay, so originally Frank Capra hired a cinematographer named Victor Milner, And he basically fired him within the first week or two of shooting, and they actually reshot all of his footage. So he doesn't receive any on-screen credit for it. Then you had someone named Joseph Walker, who was hired, and he worked on it for a few weeks. And then there was a scene that Capra wanted him to change the lighting on, and he refused. So Capra then turned to Walker's assistant, Joseph Birock, and asked him if he could do it with the lighting that I want. And he says, of course I can. So then he fired Walker and then let Birock be the cinematographer for the rest of the film. So like I said, both of them are credited, both Walker and Birock. Birock is actually listed on top of Walker. And his credit here actually launched his career as a cinematographer for the rest of his life. You know, because of the fact that he had this little opportunity that he got from Capra, you know, getting pissed off at Walker. So,
you know,
it's an interesting little story as to how someone, you know, became a famous cinematographer. Oh yeah, the guy who was doing it before me, I was his assistant, and Frank Capra got pissed off at him and decided to fire him. So why not? So,
yeah,
exactly. The freeze frame that they use in this movie, this is actually, according to IMDb, the very first freeze frame ever used in a movie in order to tell part of the story, you know, like to stop the film running, but still hearing voices talking over the whole thing. I mean, obviously nowadays we see that often, you know, the whole idea of freeze frames, but back in 1946, that was not something that was done at all. Until this idea came across, we talked about the fact of who the head angel is, right? Do you remember who the head angel was, right? What was his name?
We were talking. It was named after the writer, I think.
Well, okay, we have Joseph.
It's a long time ago.
That's, and Franklin.
Yes, okay. Franklin. Right. Yeah.
So my theory is that Franklin is basically Frank Capra. But someone else brings another theory that it was named after Franklin Roosevelt, who was president at the time. Or he was no longer president, but, you know, because he had already died by the time this movie came out. I still like the idea that it's Frank Capra, because it makes more sense that the director is God or some form of angel in charge. How's that? You know, for a better way of looking at it. You and I are both fans also of the movie The Best Years of Our Lives, which came out the same year. It turns out that they both started filming, both movies started filming on the exact same day. And this movie came out 1 week later. And every Oscar that this movie was nominated for, this was nominated for five Oscars, every one of them, The Best Years of Our Lives won instead of this movie. So it's just...
Yeah, and it's one of those, it's hard to argue with the win.
Yeah,
it's an excellent.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, you have it won, or the awards that this movie lost was Best Picture, Best Actor, Best Director, Best Sound Recording, and Best Film Editing, and all five of those went to Best Years of Our Lives. In this movie, which came out in the '50s and sixties, you know, we have the famous line where George says on the phone, "What do you mean sending her home like that half naked?" And they had to edit it for people's viewing pleasure, I guess you could say. And the edit was, "What do you mean sending my kid home from school in the rain?" So, it, you know.
Sure. Okay. You gotta keep the rhythm of this sentence. You can't add in like without doing her coat up. Well, It's no monkey fighting snakes
not
on Monday,
all.
Friday plane.
Or Yippee-ki-yay, Mr. Falcon, or Yippee-ki-yay, Kimosabi.
Yes, this is...
You know, all those things.
This is what you get when you kiss a stranger in the Alps, I think is the one from The Big Lebowski.
Could be, yes.
Instead of,
So yeah, it's an interesting edit that they did here in this movie. But, you know, that's the 50s. What do you expect? I think I might have mentioned this at one point, but in one of the original drafts of the script, there was no Mr. Potter, but it was actually George fighting an evil, you know, like having, there was an evil George who had to fight through the entire movie because he became like this corrupt politician.
I like that less.
Yes, I do too. I do too. And in the end, he ends up killing George, the good George kills the bad George by throwing him off the bridge. Something like that, you know.
Yeah.
I think that reminds me too much of Superman 3.
I never saw that one. Yeah, that's odd, because it feels like this is like quite a relatable, realistic, for the most part, story. And having like an evil clone of yourself or some kind of time travel version, I don't know. It's odd. Yeah.
Right.
Like, what would the moral of that be?
No, I completely agree with you.
I guess it's like, you know, well.
The moral is not to become corrupt. Yeah. I don't know.
It's like the moral of It's a Wonderful Life, I mean, is, you know, it's, what would you say the moral of It's a Wonderful Life is? What's the lesson being told here?
That you have to be true to yourself and know that whatever you're doing is for the right or something like that. You know, it's the idea that you know, the movie talks about the fact that you affect so many other people with things that you, but with the good deeds that you do, and you don't necessarily know all that you're doing, you know. And again, it comes down to the idea of the butterfly effect. Every little thing that you do affects someone else, which affects someone else, which affects someone else. You know, that's what I would say.
Yeah, I think that's the external moral, like George projecting outwards. I think the internal George projecting inwards moral is, don't have dreams. Like, don't have any kind of ambitions. Don't have ambitions.
Well, again, as I've mentioned numerous times, the idea that he has, you know, these ambitions of being an engineer, you know, on the one hand, it's great, but, you know, he's never studying to be an engineer. So it would still, at whatever point he decides, you know, to finally go fulfill his dream, he then needs to go to, you know, university for 3-4 years to study what he's doing and then be able to go. He's not just going to be able to go off to Africa and start building bridges. I mean, he could, but he'll eventually end up in jail because, you know, the bridge will collapse because he doesn't have the proper, you know, doesn't have the proper qualifications or engineering background to know how to build the bridge properly.
But I mean, he has a multifaceted dream. Like, it's not just go and build bridges. It's to travel the world and see everything and just get out of Bedford Falls. Is the smallest ambition he has is just move out. It's just run away.
And, yeah, but like, he can never do that.
He doesn't achieve any of them. So if he didn't have any dreams, he wouldn't have been disappointed for not living up to those dreams. Therefore, the moral is, don't have dreams.
Okay, I don't. That's a very warped way of looking at this, Jay, but that doesn't surprise me coming from you. How's that?
I'll take it.
Okay. And then the final tidbit that I wanted to talk about, it comes again from something that you and I talked about just, was it 6 short months ago when we started doing this?
Sure.
We noticed that they got the copyright wrong. Do you remember that? Do you remember that the copy?
I remember that we got the, like, I remember the conversation, but I don't remember any details.
Right, well, we didn't know the reason. The copyright said 1947 at the beginning of the movie, even though the movie came out in 1946.
Yes.
Okay, so originally the movie was slated to be released in 1947, but when they had the Christmas release of Sinbad the Sailor in 1946 and they were having trouble and weren't able to get it out in time because it was being done in Technicolor, so they ended up deciding to rush this movie instead, and they didn't notice that they had written already 1947 in the titles and just released it as is, and subsequently never went back and changed it.
So I haven't seen Gentleman's Agreement. Do you think It's a Wonderful Life would have beaten it at the Oscars?
I don't think so.
The following year?
I don't think so because of the fact that this movie was pretty much panned when it came out.
Fair enough.
Not because I think it's a better movie than Gentleman's Agreement. I actually enjoyed Gentleman's Agreement a lot, but I don't think, you know, this movie, it doesn't matter if it would have come out a year later, because I don't think that they wanted it to come out in, you know, in Christmas 1947. So it probably would have come out in like January, February. You know, I don't think they rushed it by a year. They must have rushed it just by a few months or whatever it is. So I don't know. I don't think that the critics would have been any kinder to it had it come out a little bit later.
That's fair.
Yeah, I think that's what I mean, this is a movie that it took time for people to warm up to it and understand it. Maybe it goes back to what we were saying before about the fact that this is the first theoretical multiverse movie. So maybe people had trouble wrapping their heads around the idea of an alternate universe type of thing.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, yeah, maybe. I feel like they get the concept across pretty well in the film.
Oh, I do too. But you and I have backgrounds in the multiverse. You know, we've been watching movies for decades with that idea. So the question is, if it's a concept, if it's a brand new concept that people don't know, so is that going to be harder for them to pick up on? I don't know.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter.
I don't know how the film was sold. If it was sold on the multiverse aspect, or if it was sold on, hey, it's a Jimmy Stewart drama. Where it's depressing for an hour and a half, as he's just watched his life get worse and worse and worse and worse.
And still try and follow his dream.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So
if you leave this film like 20 minutes before the end, it's a bad film. It's a downer.
Yeah, well, because you.
If there's some kind of reviewer who's got to post their review and they're running out of time, so they've got to rush out and. And just kind of assume the ending.
That's right. Yeah, he jumps off the bridge. That's it. That's the end of the movie.
Yeah.
Okay. Interesting way to look at that. All right. That's all I have to say about this movie. Did you have any tidbits that you wanted to bring up or something that you neglected to talk about 6 months ago?
I do not. I have not watched it since then. I have been listening to the show and been enjoying it. But no, nothing has kind of cropped up that I desperately disagree with. I made a note of to bring up and shout at you out.
Okay.
So no, it's all fine.
I understand. Because you've been doing that over the last few months, you know, whenever there's something. Yes. You know, why wait till the end for that? If you can do it before. All right. So now we will get to the top fives. So let's start with Capra Mundi. Any guesses on what movies are listed on my top five and in what order? What do you think?
I have just a stab. I'm not entirely sure because Capra, not one of my directors, so I haven't seen. As we know, I've not seen five of his films.
Yeah, but you've seen more than many of my guests. So.
Sure. My guess would be 5-1. Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, Arsenic and Old Lace, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, It Happened One Night, and It's Wonderful Life.
Okay, you got
a real stab in the dark.
Yeah. You got 3 out of 5 of those.
Okay.
That are in the top five, not necessarily in the right order, but they're at least there. So my number five is You Can't Take It With You.
Okay.
Which I always find very entertaining to watch, especially seeing the way that Lionel Barrymore plays in that movie in a character completely the opposite of Henry Potter. So it's always fun watching him there. Then my number four is Lost Horizon, which I've always loved that movie. Number three, Arsenic and Old Lace. A lot of fun. Number two, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And number one, surprisingly, is It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure.
Okay, so now...
I was confident about that one.
You were confident about that one. That's good. That's pretty confident. It's a good thing to be confident about. Now, what five movies do you think are the top five movies chosen by all my guests? In this list,
the exact same list I just said. I only did one top five this one because, like I said, Frank Capra, I don't know. So yeah, 5-1. Mr. Deeds Goes to Town. Arsenic and Old Lace. Mr. Smith goes to Washington. It Happened One Night. It's a Wonderful Life. I think that's the top five average as well.
Okay, so number five is You Can't Take It With You. 15 points. Then we have a tie for number three. So it's 3 and 4. Arsenic and Old Lace and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, both of them got 55 points.
Okay. So I'm going to take it as I got both of those right, because I did 3 and 4. So joint third, I'm taking as being correct.
It Happened One Night, has the number two slot with 61 points. Okay. And what would be your guess for the number of points for It's a Wonderful Life?
It's a Wonderful Life. Oh, how many? So how many guests are we talking?
How many guests did I have, or how many gave an answer?
How many guests gave an answer to this ranking?
Well, actually, now that I think about it, every one of my guests saw It's a Wonderful Life. So that's actually a no-brainer from that perspective. 28 and me, so it's 29. There were 29 people who've given their rankings of this movie.
Okay, so it's out of 145. I'm going to say this probably got like 136 or something.
It actually has 117.
Okay, fine.
Only 18 people listed it as their number one. We actually have three people who didn't appear on their list at all.
Okay.
Which I'm a little surprised at that still, but I think that they, you know, they just wanted to be fair to other movies. We had Jim, Richard, and Leandra, who didn't have it on their list at all. Then we have one person who listed it as the number four with, you know, where they got 2 points. Then we have three people who listed it as their number three. And then there were four people who listed it as the number four. So it came out with 117 points at the end of the day. So, yeah, interesting. Interesting way to look at that. We'll go to Jimmy Stewart Thursday.
Okay.
So what do you think of this one?
So for your list, I think I'm going to guess it's Wonderful Life is number one again. I know you're a big fan of Rope, so I have that at number two. And then Rear Window is just excellent, so that should be like up there. So Rear Window number three. Then I just kind of guessed Anatomy of a Murder and The Shop Around the Corner for four and five.
Again, you got three out of the five here. Not bad. So my number five is Rope. Okay. It's not number two.
Okay.
I am a big fan of it, but I'm a bigger fan of some of the other movies here. Number four was The Man Who Knew Too Much.
Okay, sure. I always thought that Rope was your highest Stuart Hitchcock. Apparently not.
No, apparently not. Number three was Anatomy of a Murder.
Okay.
Number two is Mr. Smith Goes. Okay, which you should see. I think you'll like
it. It's on my list.
Okay, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington is my number two, and my number one is It's a Wonderful Life.
Sure.
Okay, so how do you think the group rankings went on this one?
So I have this one, number five, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, and then I have three Hitchcocks in a row, a Vertigo, Rope, Rear Window, 4-3-2, and then number one, for some reason I thought might be It's a Wonderful Life. I don't know why I thought that. Just seems like it might be correct.
All right. So number five is actually The Philadelphia Story.
Okay.
With 31 points.
I guess it makes sense. You won the Oscar for it.
Yeah. 31 points. Then we have number four is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington with 34 points. Number three is Vertigo with 58 points. And number two is Rear Window with 63 points.
Okay.
All right. Now, how many points do you think number one got?
So I think number one is It's a Wonderful Life. And so I'm going to say it got less than it got in the Frank Capra ranking, but more than Rear Window got in the James Stewart ranking. So I'm going to say somewhere in the 80s, let's say like 85.
108. So Rear Window got 63, and this one got 108. Once again, we had three people who did not list it, and surprisingly, it's not the same three people, but it sort of is. Because it was Jim, Leandra, and then Richard Dunham instead of Richard Kirk.
I see. A different Richard.
A different
contrast.
That's right. All right. Now we shall move on to the final top five list, the Oscar Oops. All right. So why don't you try it?
Trickier this one.
What?
More to pick. This is trickier. There's more to
pick from. Especially since I will give you a hint that for the group tally, there are three movies that are tied for second place.
Great. Right.
Okay. And the third place is just 1 point below that.
Excellent. Well, I mean, for your ranking, I know that you're probably the only person who's been on this show who has seen every film on this list, I think. Have you seen all of the Best Picture nominees?
Yes.
So you've seen.
Yes.
So yes. I think you had some guests who were like, I think this film I have seen should have beaten this film I haven't seen. A ridiculous thing to say.
I agree with you on that. And and there's also, as you noticed, there was one guest where I completely cut out his segment of Oscar Oops because he said, well, I'm going to do it differently. I'm just going to tell you which ones I think we're deserving of winning. And I was like, but that's not what we're doing. And he's like, but that's what I'm doing. I said, okay. I let him talk about it. And then in the edit, it's not there. So
that was noted. So yes, for your list, I'm just gonna go with films that I know you like, basically. So I know that you like Apollo 13, but I think you also like Braveheart, but I'm just gonna say that you put Apollo 13 over Braveheart. Number 5, number 4, Raiders of the Lost Ark over Chariots of Fire, number 3, The Father over Nomadland, number 2, 2 and 1 could go either way, but I've got number 2, Star Wars over Annie Hall, and number 1, Saving Private Ryan over Shakespeare in Love.
All right, well, you're close on some of those. You know,
some isn't the answer I wanted.
Well, let's put it this way. Three of the choices that you just mentioned are on my honorable mention list. Okay, so Star Wars. I do like Annie Hall a lot, and I love Star Wars, but I still believe that at the time, Annie Hall was the right decision.
Okay.
You know, because people didn't know to appreciate Star Wars at the time for the way that we did today. Raiders probably should have beaten Chariots of Fire, but again, at the time...
Should have been nominated.
That's a separate issue. Okay, and then the third honorable mention was Apollo 13, which I love, and I can't understand why it lost to Braveheart, because Braveheart, I really do love Braveheart also, but Braveheart's only Best Picture win in all of the awards that year was at the Oscars. Didn't win any other Best Picture award. Nowhere. So it was very strange that it actually won. And I do think Apollo 13 probably should have won that, but those are my honorable mentions because there are other movies. I looked at it more from the perspective where the movies that did win were terrible movies and should not have won. You know, so like I said, Annie Hall and Chariots of Fire, Quiet Jay, and Braveheart are all very good movies, if not great movies. Chariots of Fire is a great movie.
Chariots
of Fire, I just rewatched a month ago. It's not that bad. It's not terrible. You know, so it doesn't appear on this list because I don't watch it and say I can't believe this movie had any chance of winning. It's a very good movie. It's an inspirational movie. There are a lot of problems with it, yes. No question about that. But again,
the only memorable thing is the score, and it's a bad score.
Okay. All right. You have the right to your opinion on that. So my number 5
I just bitch that it beat Raiders.
That's right. My number 5 is The Pianist, which I think should have beaten Chicago because I absolutely hate Chicago. I cannot understand how it won so many awards. I just rewatched it, and it was horrendous watching it again. For like the fourth time or something like that in the last 20 years. The fact that Roman Polanski won Best Director means that despite all of his issues, you know, people were still willing to vote for him for Best Director, but not willing to give him for Best Picture. I didn't understand because The Pianist is an unbelievable movie. I don't know if you've ever seen it. Have you ever seen it?
I do. The Pianist is great. I do really enjoy Chicago. On a separate note, stop watching films you know you don't like.
Well, I rewatched them. Like the no, I rewatched them with the hope that I will re-like them. You know, that I'll find a reason to like them. Last month I rewatched Cimarron, which is a Western from 1931, which won Best Picture. And I watched it a decade ago, and I hated it. And I rewatched it now just to get a fresh view of it. And I actually loved it. I thought it was amazing what they did with it. So it does happen. You know, I actually even wrote in my review of it that this is why I rewatch movies, because sometimes I will come across something and say, wow, you know, I can't believe that I didn't like this beforehand. So.
Well, I never planned to watch Big Trouble in Little China again. I've given it 3 shots. I hated it each time. And that's.
Wait, what movie do you not plan on watching again?
I'm done. Big Trouble in Little China. I'm done with it.
Okay, that's fine. That's between you and Mark.
Three times. I'm out.
That's, you know.
Yeah, sure. Between me and Mark, me and Richard, me and DJ, me and everyone I talked to about that film.
Except for me. I don't think it's amazing. I actually found it really boring boring and silly. But whatever. That's a separate issue. Yes. Okay.
But yeah, the pianist is excellent, but I don't mind Chicago having one because I do enjoy Chicago. Okay.
Well, you like Barbie too, so what can I tell you?
Lots of people like Barbie, Rob. Barbie is great.
Okay. That's fine. I rewatched Barbie and I didn't like it. And I liked it less the second time than I did the first time. So there you go.
Oh, God.
Okay. Number four is the Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Rings, which I think is, in my opinion, the best of the three movies, the best of the trilogy.
Can I guess what you think should have won?
That's the one that should have won.
No, can I guess what you think? Oh, you think Fellowship should have won. Sorry. Okay.
What movie did win, Jay?
I thought you said Return of the King. Yeah. Beautiful Mind won.
Yes, Beautiful Mind won. I'm not a fan of Beautiful Mind.
Sorry.
I think it's I'm not a fan at all. But I'm a very big fan of The Fellowship as a math student,
I have a soft spot for Beautiful Mind.
Okay.
Because
you can watch the movie and start doing your equations. Yeah.
No, not at all. I don't understand anything he's doing in it. But just from a math perspective, I like that film won. I guess. Okay. Maybe that was a makeup for Apollo 13 not winning. Is the game was wrong?
I think so. I agree. It's like this year where.
But yeah, I thought you were saying Return.
No.
Using that, I shouldn't. I was like, did you think like Master and Commander?
No, I'm not a fan of Master and Commander.
Okay.
What else was that year? Mystic River? No, not Mystic River. Oh, you know, that was the year of Mystic River, yeah.
Mystic River, Seabiscuit, and Lost.
Okay, so personally, my favorite is Seabiscuit.
That's the one I haven't seen. That's not a horse guess.
Number three is actually one of the ones that you guessed. The Father should have beaten Nomadland, which again, I rewatched Nomadland and horrendous. I don't get it.
Awful.
Don't get the movie. Okay.
Well, The Father, that's fantastic. Excellent.
And I've seen it like six times now, and it's just amazing every single time. You know, what Anthony Hopkins does here, but also the way that they keep changing the set around him also, so that we see the differences that he sees.
Yeah.
But you have to, I mean, that's a movie. If someone does it minute by minute, I don't think I can have the stamina to do that. But if someone does that minute by minute, wow, yeah. You'd be able to say, okay, in this scene, you know, you don't have this on the wall and you have this is in this place. And it's just crazy. You know, it's an amazing movie. Number two was 1917, which should have beaten Parasite.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised you didn't guess that one for me.
I had that as like an honorable mention. If I had to guess your top 10, that would have been in there.
Apparently it is.
But I can't remember.
It is within my top 10, but it's number two.
But also, like, I think Parasite is an excellent film that I don't mind having won. Like, so I think I preferred 1917, but Parasite is maybe my like top three.
Really? Okay. You see, I look at it and I always look at it from the perspective that, you know, is the movie an all around great movie? Not just, you know, and I didn't think that Parasite was as impactful as 1917. Yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, 1917 has a lot going on. There's a lot more effects work than Parasite has. So if you're
taking it from I'm not taking it only from that perspective. I'm taking it from everything, from the story, from the way it's shot, from the way it looks, from everything that's going on. The way, you know, to me, a Best Picture winner is something that is the all-around best movie in as many aspects as possible. So I mean that's why I was very disappointed with Parasite 1. And my number one was also on your list, and that is something that I've been harping on for 27 years now. Saving Private Ryan should have beaten Shakespeare in Love, no question about that. So that is my number one there.
I'm looking forward to season 11 of your podcast when you eventually do Saving Private Ryan Minute.
I don't think so.
I think so.
Because someone else already claimed it, so I can't do it. You know.
Hey, I bequeath it to you, Rob. I pass it on.
No, thank you.
It is yours.
No, thank you. No, thank you.
That's a rough start as well.
It's an emotional start. I don't think so. Yeah, you're gonna have fun with that first 5 minutes.
Yeah.
I think you would prefer to do Stand By Me than Saving Private Ryan.
I don't know. I'll be here for either one.
Okay. How many movies do you think are on this list of movies that were mentioned by people over the course of this entire season?
Oh, God. I mean, this is probably your most populous list you've ever had people do, I would guess. Yeah. So you said you had 29 guests, including yourself. Five to a guest. I would eight. Does 85 again? Let's take
up in the 70. 70. I was actually wrong. This is not the most populous list because I have 71 that were part of Weekend Romance for When Harry Met Sally.
Oh, yes, okay. Rom-com is also a very
For sure.
A big list to pick from.
Completely. All right. So, what do you think were the top five films by my?
Okay. So I'm going to say number five. This is just based on having listened. Number five, Fargo. Joint second. That you said earlier, that would be Raiders of the Lost Ark, Saving Private Ryan, Brokeback Mountain, and number one, Star Wars.
All right, so
is my guess.
No.
Fine, fair.
Okay, so number five. I'm not surprised. As I mentioned earlier,
you said there was a separate number five. Three would join.
Number five was Pulp Fiction. With 16 points.
Forgot about Pulp Fiction, of course.
Okay. And just so you know, Fargo and Fellowship of the Ring both have 15 points. Okay. So they just missed the cutoff. And then we have three movies with 17, which are Citizen Kane, Life is Beautiful, and Saving Private Ryan.
Oh, yeah, I got one.
So that's two through four. And the number one movie with 23 points. Any guess now as to what it might have been?
Was it anything I said on my list?
It was on your... Yes, you mentioned it.
So I said Star Wars at number one.
Star Wars has 13 points.
So it's either Raiders or Brokeback Mountain. Is it Brokeback Mountain?
No.
It's Raiders. Right.
No. I lost. Brokeback Mountain had 7 points. That's
okay.
It.
So Raiders.
So it was Raiders of the Lost Ark with 23 good. Points.
Because Chariots of Fire is garbage, as discussed.
The irony of it is that there were only six guests who actually, named it on their list. But because, three of them gave it fives, and then one gave it a four, and one gave it a three, and one gave it a one, that's what brought it over the top to 23 points. But it didn't even need that many.
We have to assume that 23 of us haven't seen Chariots of Fire, and therefore couldn't put Raiders above it. And they shouldn't see Chariots of Fire, because it's garbage.
Right, so the three people who gave it 5 points were you, Jim, and Curtis. And then Richard...
Yes, this is the fastest I've ever given anything 5 points on your show. Is Raiders shot Chariots of Fire, get rid of it, done.
Okay, and... And Richard gave it 4 points. So, okay. And then Todd gave it 1 point, and Sturshik yesterday gave it 3 points. So there we go. That's how it reached the 23-point mark. But again, when looking at it from this perspective, 23 points is a huge gap from the from the 17 that the next three movies got. So. All right, so now we're into Jay trying to guess the number of minutes that this movie has gone, and obviously the average episode length of each of the episodes. Now, if you want, I can give you the stats from the last five seasons, and then you can guess from there if you want.
I'll guess blind. So this is minute episode 131.
Correct.
So if I guess that your average episode length is a little over 30, let's say 32 minutes. Although some of those earlier ones, let's go 35. So 35 times 131 is 393. Why didn't I ever have a calculator on my desk to do this with?
Sorry. Don't you have one on your computer?
So it's that's cheating. So 35, 131. So I'm gonna guess. All right, like 4,500 minutes.
It's a little more, wouldn't it?
No, that's right. Okay. What's the average length then? Is the average more than 35? I'm guessing then.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay, that was my guess.
Yes, it is. Okay, so this movie, including I'm taking into consideration that this episode is an hour, even though I think it might be slightly longer, but I'm taking into consideration it's an hour. So that means that we've talked about It's a Wonderful Life for almost 81 hours, 80.98.
Okay.
That's the ranking, which again, assuming that we will be talking a little more than an hour here, so it will go slightly over the 81 minutes. Just to give so that's 4,859 minutes.
I wasn't far off with 4.5 hours. Right. Because my guess was 4,585 was my exact figure that I was guessing.
Okay.
So yeah, not terribly far off. Okay.
Okay. Now, do you think that? So the average episode is 37.09 minutes.
Okay.
Sure. Okay. So now the question is where do you think the ranking of the length of these episodes fits and the amount of time that we've talked about this movie within the last 5 seasons, including, all 6 seasons?
Are we doing amount of time or doing average episode
Both.
Length? Because Both. That's going to vary depending on
the Both.
Length. Okay, well then, this is going to be longer than When Harry Met Sally and Planes, Trains, and Automobiles because it was a much shorter film.
Correct.
but probably... I would say less than Great Escape. That's a longer film, but then those episodes were probably shorter because that was your first season.
That's correct.
So that's just how it goes. So average episode length, I'm going to say, I guess this isn't your longest because whilst like episodes do tend to get longer as the podcast goes on season by season, I'd say there's probably less to discuss in this one, and you didn't have the script to compare it to, which is where your episodes get long, because you compare it to the script at the end. So I'm going to say that this is, I'm going to say fourth. I'm not going to give you a full seven, a full six.
Number four of six, meaning that six is the longest? Is that what you're saying? Or you're saying one is the longest?
I think six is the shortest, and this is... Yeah, one is the longest.
Okay, you're way off on that.
Is my guess.
All right. This is okay, actually... Great.
That's okay.
Okay.
This isn't information I should have in my
Again, head. It's That's for fine. The fun of it. So this is the second longest average episodes. Die Hard 2 was number one. With the average episode was 37.85. And this one's 37.09. But when it comes to the amount of time talking about the movie, this is the longest because this is 81 hours. And the closest was Die Hard, which was 79.65. And then Die Hard 2 was 78.23. And then, as you said, the Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and When Harry Met Sally, since they're much shorter, they're both in the 50s. We have 52.42 for Planes, Trains, and Automobiles and 57.33 for When Harry Met Sally. And then The Great Escape hovers at the 66.92 minute mark. But when you look at the average episodes, so The Great Escape was the shortest because the average episode was 22.94, because that also includes a 2-minute episode at the beginning and which drags things down a little bit. But there were a lot of episodes. There were a lot of episodes of The Great Escape that were between 15 and 30 minutes.
Sure.
So it's The Escape, Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, When Harry Met Sally, Die Hard, It's a Wonderful Life, and then Die Hard 2 for the average episode length. So, yeah. All right. Anything else you want to say about this? Are you going to do a deep blue... how blue this one is?
No. It's 0% blue. Depth-wise, it's probably the least deep film we've ever covered, given just how far up in space they are at the start. But So I haven't done a full ranking, because beyond that, what's the point? They are deep at 1 point, which is when... They're deep at 2 points.
That's right.
When George dives in the water to save his brother, and then when they jump in the river at the end. That's the two deep bits. But there's no blue bits. And that's so no, I didn't bother doing a ranking. But I would like to know where this sits in your top five of films you've covered. Something we established on the last season.
Wait, yeah, you only give me top five, but there's six movies here.
Yes, you got a kick. I think Die Hard 2 was in your fifth spot last time. So you've either got to kick Die Hard 2 off the list and never talk about it again, or never talk about It's a Wonderful Life again.
Okay, so that's your choice. So what is to explain to me what your what you mean by top five? Meaning my top five movies in general, or based on the fact that I talked about them, which one did I enjoy talking about the most?
I would say movies in general. Like, you're picking your five favorite films based on the six that you have now covered minute by minute. What is your top five?
Okay, obviously it's a very dynamic list, so it's going to be. I don't even remember what my top five was last time. You can tell me after I do it now. Saying you can tell me after I do it. Well, how did you remember that I was number five?
Because it would be.
Ah, okay. No, but that's on yours, not necessarily mine.
No, it would be on yours as well.
You're correct.
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with
that's,
you on
that. That's the one that you were kind of. I'm not saying you don't like Die Hard 2, but that's the one that you were, that kind of got dragged into the franchise, into your podcast, because you're doing the Die Hard franchise.
No,
the
but other I,
you picked,
I
picked.
But I. That's true. But I do love Die Hard 2. You know, it was the first one I saw in the theater. It was the first movie that I saw twice in a row. You know, in the theater also. So, you know, made a big impact on me from that perspective. But you're right. Die Hard 2 would not make the top five. Okay. The question is, where would I put It's a Wonderful Life on here? Okay. I believe that Die Hard is still number one. If it was number one last time, I don't remember what it was, but I would say that Die Hard itself is number one. Then I would follow that by The Great Escape, follow that by It's a Wonderful Life, followed by When Harry Met Sally, and then followed by Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Okay.
So there's a chance that after season 7, I might bump off Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, but I have a feeling that I probably won't. Being that I know what season 7 is. Again, it's a movie I love.
Me too.
But, you know, I don't know if it, but we'll have to see in 6 months from now where my rankings are at that point. Again, I don't know what my rankings were 6 months ago, and it doesn't matter because, you know, I'm a firm believer.
There's no way of finding out.
Well, of course there is. You can go back and re-listen.
Nope. No way. There is no way.
You can go back and re-listen to that episode. You can't? Are you saying that episode is gone?
I don't know. I don't know if that's possible. I don't know. Okay. I'm saying there's no possible way of finding out.
Well, if you want to find out, and maybe if I do too, I will go back to listen to more of a crapshoot, which was the final episode of Die Hard 2, which aired on the 29th of October. So, which is exactly 6 months ago from today.
A long time.
So yes, that is my answer for now, and I will stick to it. Who knows when it will change and how it will change.
Sounds good. Well, we know yes. When it might change.
That's
which
right.
Is at the end of season 7. So Rob, what are you talking about for season 7?
Season 7. So hopefully we will be back tomorrow. You know, unlike last time, which I had to take a 2-week hiatus for some strange reason. Hopefully this time I will not have to take a hiatus. And so tomorrow I have a very special guest. Do you know who that special guest is, Jay?
I do. It's someone that you need to stop having on this show.
He's nah.
Terrible. I never listen to
him. The fact that you don't listen to his episodes is a separate issue, but I think other people do. So that's fine. So
you're the only guest of yours I refuse to listen to.
All right, that's actually a good thing. It's a good thing that that's the only one as opposed to anybody else. So, yes, Jay will be back with me for the rest of this week. Hopefully, it'll be this week to discuss the first week of Die Hard with a Vengeance, the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick.
The best?
Which is the continuation of the exploits of John McClane. And this time we get to see him in New York City.
And this time he is hungover.
Yes, that's very true.
Only
that's very true. So I first want to thank all of my guests this week. So I will quickly run down the list of all of my guests this season. thanking each and every one of them. So I want to thank Jim O'Kane, David Brook, Nick Rehack, Tierney Deal, Lisa Leahy. I always get that wrong. Lisa Leahy.
Every time.
Every time. Even when I talk to her, I get it wrong. It's I don't know why I can't get it right.
It's not spelled.
That's right. Niall McGowan, Richard Kirkham, Todd Liebenow, Scott Myers, Alan Sanders, Duncan Shields, Carolyn and Justin from the old movie Time Machine, Jonathan Parker, Richard Dunham, Bubba Wheat, Leandra Lynn, Emily Graziano, Travis Bowe, Curtis Father David, Dana Nachman, Austin Pryor, Dean O'Carroll, Amanda Kirkham, Mary Owen, the daughter of Don Reed, Joe Amadai, Jason Sturczyk, and my pseudo co-host who starts and ends each season with me, my good friend Jay Cluett. So thank you, Jay.
Hey, that's me.
Yes. The person who doesn't listen to the first week or final episode.
I skew the numbers on those episodes. Thank you for having me, as always. Thank you for continuing to host the show. And thank you for continuing to pick films that I like to listen to and talk about.
Well, you know that's what I do. I only will pick films that Jay likes. Because if Jay doesn't like them, Jay won't come on. No.
Come on. I just want to listen.
Okay. Well, so far so good. I've gone 7. I'm 7-0 from that perspective. Let's keep going now.
Yep.
I honestly have no idea what I'm doing for season 8, so we'll have to wait and see how that plays out over the next few months. I have a few options in mind, but we'll have to wait and see. So, Jay, would you like to tell people where they can find Jay Cluett?
Sure, thank you. Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, is my podcast where my co-host Mark Hoffmer and I talk about Deep Blue Sea. We talked about the whole franchise, the whole trilogy, scene by scene. We're now looking at some Deep Blue Sea adjacent films. That's films directed by Rennie Harlan, featuring aquatic action or sharks. Been on a bit of a shark run recently because we have the 25th anniversary of Deep Blue Sea coming up. So I'm just trying to watch all of the quintessential shark films before it comes out. This week's episode, which is about on the 1st of May, is on a Bollywood shark film called A Tank, which is a lot of fun. We had Will Slay on the episode to talk about that because there is a spectacular shark versus helicopter crash at the end of A Tank. A beautiful film. So that's Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, which you can find all over social media at Deep Blue Sea Pod. I have a personal site, which is lifeversusfilm.com, but not a lot happens there. But you can follow me on twitter.com at lifeversusfilm. Or on Instagram at JAYCLUITT if you'd like to see pictures of my dogs and waterfalls and very little else.
Scottish waterfalls.
Yeah. Sometimes my dog's on a waterfall. That's the best. Everything I love in one picture.
All right. And while you do that, you can rate, review, and subscribe to any podcast you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Twitter. And you can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. And you can, if you want to send me an email, you can send an email to movierobminute@movierob.net. So that's it. That's a wrap. Finished 131 episodes of this season. Thank you to everyone for listening, everyone who joined me as guests, and especially thank you to Jay for being a listener and being willing to be on shows even though he won't listen to his own shows.
Happy to be here. I listen to myself enough when I edit my own shows.
Okay, I understand. That's enough. I should give you this episode to edit. That's what you're telling me?
No, thank you. I'm behind. <with it>, so.
See, thanks to you, I'm caught up. So there you go.
There we go. You're welcome.
I like having the pressured deadline, you know, to get it done. All right. So I will be back tomorrow again with Jay.
Hey, me too. I'm going to get so much sleep before tomorrow's episode. I'm going to be so well rested on that show. You have no idea.
All right. I look forward to it.
Not tired. I'll be all week.
And we will be back tomorrow to talk about Die Hard with a Vengeance. And for the final time, I will once again say, hot dog.
Hot dog.
I love you truly, truly dear. Life with its sorrow, life. life with its tears.